Please enjoy this previously recorded segment.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. You're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Artie Nathan, President and COO of Strategic Development Worldwide. Artie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your history. I certainly know that you served as Chief Human Resource Officer for the Steve Wynn's Gaming Companies, and I believe that was 1983 to 2006. Tell us a little bit about your history, a little about where you are today, and tell me a little about how you got to this position in life.
I went to Cornell, the School of Industrial and Labor Relations, and got a degree, actually, in human resource management back in the 60s and early 70s. I worked in a manufacturing company for several years and then was recruited to go to work in the gaming industry by Steve Wynn at his Golden Nugget property in Atlantic City. I worked for him and opened all of his hotels around the world for nearly 25 years and had an opportunity to step away from it several years ago to teach and write and do some consulting. And today I am working with a consulting firm that is based out of Taos, New Mexico. And my partner and I do all kinds of engagements, helping companies to create cultures of excellence.
So you clearly enjoy what you're doing. You speak around the world. What are some of the highlights of some of the places you've been, and what are some of the fun things that you've done?
Well, opening big casino projects was always exciting. I opened a dozen of them, and most of them had 5,000 to 10,000 employees, so they were large projects, interviewing and hiring and training and managing lots of people. Getting a chance to do that in China, which was my last project, was especially interesting because I had to learn to redo everything in a different language and culture. And that really gave me an opportunity to step back and think about the things that I had done and how to make them better in different circumstances. Since then, I have had an opportunity to work for all kinds of companies, both in the hospitality and non-hospitality environments, mostly around helping people to hire and manage their employees better and get a higher output out of people.
You know, you've certainly done a lot of hiring over your career. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, I saw you at the Maine HR convention. You talked about the right business model for HR success, the case for hiring imperfect people. Why did you have that as a topic, and what makes you talk about imperfect people as people that you should hire?
It goes back a lot of years when I was starting to open casinos, and people would say, well, what kind of people are we looking for? We need a lot of them, so we need a lot of applications. But what are we looking for in applicants? And over time, it dawned on me that hiring for attitude and training for skills was a better methodology than just hiring for skills. You can certainly find a lot of people who have done the jobs you're hiring for, but if they don't have the right attitudes, you're not going to get very far with them. And you really can't teach somebody an attitude. That's a characteristic they have to walk in the door with. And you can certainly nurture it and enhance it, but you can't change people. You want those who want to come to work, those who care a lot, and those who work hard. And those are attributes that I have perfected discovering in applicants over the years. And along the way, I had an opportunity to meet with a politician who asked me to hire one of his constituents who needed a second chance. And that was the first ex-con that I met and had an opportunity to hire. Certainly scared me the first one out. I didn't know what we were doing or how to make the most of that. But this guy had a great attitude, and he wanted to make the most of a second chance in his life. And so I got to know that part of hiring through him. And since then, I hired hundreds of people for the Wynn companies, people who were ex-felons, people who wanted a second chance. And now I'm on the board of a nonprofit organization in Las Vegas that trains and places and mentors ex-offenders. And we've done thousands of people over the last several years. And it is becoming a very popular thing because people who want a second chance, who've earned the right to a second chance, tend to work harder to keep that second chance than other people who've never been down on their luck.
You bring up a good point, right, is that sometimes I think, and you've mentioned it in your topic and conversation, is that HR professionals and business leaders get really nervous about hiring in that situation. How do you calm the fears, and I guess in some ways it's fear, of hiring somebody who has a record?
Well, the fears on the part of the hiring manager are certainly understandable. In human resources, we talk about negligent hiring. You don't want to knowingly hire someone that's going to put customers or other employees or the business at risk through bad actions. I understand that, but you also have to understand that HR professionals do background checks on everybody they hire, and we are somewhat effective at getting the right people, but we still have those who have bad attendance records or bad attitudes or bad performance or do bad things, even with those background checks. Because background checks in and of themselves are flawed. There's very little we can tell a prospective employer. There's privacy involved. And so we tend to hedge what we say. But on the part of ex-offenders, they have a long history with prison officials, prison guards, probation officers, and others who help them along the way. And you get all of that information when you start down the road interviewing someone like this. And it is very helpful. You also get the assistance of many trained individuals, whether they're parole officers or community activists who are assisting. And I think managers need that to help them overcome the fear, but also overcome the what do I do now questions that naturally come up with an individual whose background you're not familiar with. So with all that assistance, with all that information, I suggest that we tend to know more about these individuals than we know about those who just apply off the street.
You know, one of the questions that certainly comes up in today's society is that people can Google anyone, right? And you can certainly Google if somebody's hired, and people do. When somebody enters a workforce, they might say, hey, it's going to be a colleague of mine. Let me just look them up on Facebook. Let me check them out on Google. And they might see a record. They might see a criminal activity. And it might make the team nervous, not so much the organization. Maybe they've gone through, as you speak, the conversations with the prison officials and with the officers and with the, you know, all that thing. How does HR in those situations calm the troops?
Well, people are naturally afraid of things that they know little about. And that happens all the time. In HR, when we hire a new individual to join an existing team of people, they're already going through some change management processes, some growing together, and team building. And it's just taking a different type of individual, being very honest and forthright about who they are and where they're coming from, encouraging them to be open and others to be open in their questions. And I have found that initial fear and anxiety goes away quickly when you find out that they're real people, and that they're real people who have made a mistake, paid for it, and want to correct whatever went wrong in the future. And I think people tend to give others an opportunity to prove themselves. It happens every day when we hire new people. This is just a different kind of person. And in my experience, the first guy I hired was a gang member who had a violent past, but had a great story and an open interest in changing his life. And while the people he joined at work were scared to begin with, they gave him an opportunity and he earned their trust and respect. Again, I think that earning trust and respect for new hires goes on all the time. This might be a little bit higher bar to overcome, but HR can help in their team building efforts, in their communication efforts, in their mentoring people and bringing them together. You have to take a little extra time, but it's worth it. The other thing you have to overcome is the hiring manager or supervisor, because they may think that this is a person I know nothing about, nor do I understand how to motivate them. The fact of the matter is that an individual who has done their time and earned the right for a second chance is going to work extra hard to make others comfortable, to fit in, to learn. And that's not always the case with new hires. Some people, you know, have a chip on their shoulder or whatever. Hiring is not an exact science. There's a bit of art to it, and you have to do a little bit of work. But in the end, I have found that this group of people does an extraordinary job of fitting in and doing a good job. Now, you say, well, what does that mean exactly? I'll tell you. Someone who has earned the right for a second chance and asked for it will never take a day off from work. They will never call in sick because they don't want to disappoint you or ruin that chance. A person in this situation will always raise their hand and offer to do more because they want to make sure that they impress you appropriately. So just thinking about new hires in every organization, what's your experience? Do you have someone who is reticent or someone who is trying hard? You want the latter. And I found that with the hundreds of people that I've hired directly, and now with Hope for Prisoners, those who I helped to place, the experience for the hiring manager and the new colleagues has been extraordinarily positive.
When you're talking about this positive effect on the organization, I can certainly understand the higher level of engagement, right? Certainly, they are more engaged. They want to prove themselves. How does a HR professional look at this and say, okay, what is the messaging that I'm going to be giving to the team? What is the messaging I'm going to give to leadership to lessen the risk factor that the organization may feel?
Well, there's a couple of messages. One is we value individuals and what they bring to the job. And then you have to identify what this group might bring to the job that others may or may not. And again, it's this this burning interest and commitment to a second chance. That really means a lot. And when managers say, in my next hire, I want somebody that comes to work, that's really important. This is a group that comes to work. The other message I think that is very important is that we give people a chance. Now, whether it's a first or a second chance or a promotional chance or whatever, that is an extraordinary message for companies that support their people, promote their people, and try to get the best for and out of their people. And I think that other employees see that, see you doing it effectively, and say, well, look, that's impressive. Now, you have to do it for everybody. You can't give chances to some and not to others. You have to be very open. And openness in this case is to a new form of diversity. For those of us who grew up in the 60s and 70s, through the real diversity development in America, it started with ethnic diversity and gender diversity and age diversity and disabilities, diversity. There were all kinds. And then it got into economic diversity. When people started to hire a lot of people on public assistance. And this is just a different kind of diversity. It's a different kind of person. But in the end, it takes all kinds of people to make a strong team. And you can't have any bias against someone because they are different. Different is the enemy of greatness. And you got to make people understand that difference can be the promoter of excellence.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back. If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
Life's never perfect, but as realtors, we know living it in the perfect place can make a big difference.
Imagine
hiding from your screeching children in that spacious walk-in closet, watching the neighbor's dog poop on the freshly sodded grass you negotiated during closing, dropping your cell phone in the toilet of the spa-like five-piece bathroom again. So get the perfect place to house all of life's imperfections. Get Realtor. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring local.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest is Artie Nathan. He is the president and COO of Strategic Development Worldwide, and he's just an all-around good speaker, as I got to see him up at the HR convention. Artie, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
All right, we've been talking about hiring people with criminal backgrounds and the challenges that sometimes employers face or feel. One of the things that certainly comes to mind is, and maybe you've certainly dealt with this, I'm sure, and can give maybe an example. Are there some hires, when you think about, you know, criminal situations, that are a little more difficult or easier to hire on? I give you an example, people with abuse backgrounds or sexual backgrounds or, a murder or assault or different things. Tell me a little bit about, how an organization, if they're thinking about going down this line, uses those real criminal situations to determine what to do.
Well, there's certainly a broad spectrum of people and backgrounds that are coming out of the judicial system. You have to remember that a large percentage of people in jail are there for drug offenses and DUIs and prostitution and stuff like that, that are crimes of need to do something to earn money when they don't have many other options. And the prison officials will tell you, when someone goes into jail, they're those who immediately start to rehabilitate themselves, and there are others who just don't care. And So working with the prison officials, they'll tell you the good ones versus the bad ones. And the minor crimes are much easier to think about if you're a hiring entity. But I have hired people who have done breaking and entering, people who have done murder. And it all has to do with their decision to rehabilitate themselves. And a lot of people spend a long time in jail thinking about and correcting their mistakes. And those are the ones that deserve a second chance. There's also people that just don't care. And whether they're ex-offenders or not, there's a lot of people in the workforce who just don't care or trying to get into the workforce. They're not the ones you want. I also think that there's a much harder road for those who have done sexual abuse types of crimes. I think those are harder for people to overcome in their mind. But the rest of it, it just seems to work out. I actually hired and or placed a half a dozen murderers and people who spent 15 to 30 years in jail. And all of them who wanted to rehabilitate themselves came out and have done exceptionally well. The first guy I hired, he was 20 years old. He was in a bar. He got in a fight, took a good swing at somebody, and hit him just right. The guy fell, hit his head on the bar, and was dead when he hit the ground. I mean, that is manslaughter. There's no question about it. He spent 12 years in jail. He came out and had a humble nature and a real interest in turning his life around. He ended up becoming a warehouse manager for us and did an exceptionally good job, not only working hard, but understanding people. I mean, when you have a lot of years thinking by yourself of what's right and what's wrong and what I would do different if I had a chance, this guy was a great example of that. And the employees that he managed really appreciated him. Now, one of the things that you have to encourage someone trying to get a second chance is openness and honesty. They can't hide their past. They can't try to cover it up because, like you say, anybody can Google anybody and you find out things and you don't want to be surprised. Coworkers will be very fearful if they find out something inadvertently rather than directly. So we encourage all of our applicants and all of our ex-offenders to be open about it. I know there's a big push in America to ban the box. Have you ever been convicted of a crime? I think you have to keep the box and encourage people to be open about it. And there's nothing wrong about openness in the workplace. I think it builds respect and trust and good teamwork.
You know, you certainly speak some real truth there, and I think that that is counterintuitive to what is currently happening across the country in terms of not sharing that information. I certainly understand that there's the perception of it's predominantly minorities that it affects in terms of the ban the box, and I certainly understand that. But the openness that you talk about is not really shared that much, and it's a little counterintuitive to HR, right? Because HR in general is like, we don't say too much. We don't talk too much about things that happen like that unless we have to. It's private. We don't talk about employees. We don't tell about their history. How do you reconcile that challenge from the HR perspective between what they've been taught for years and that openness that you talk about?
Well, I think one of the big issues today is transparency. And you have to figure out how to use transparency appropriately. You certainly don't want to give away or talk about things that are inappropriate. But one's background and how they have learned and what they've done and how they've changed is an important topic when you're onboarding people. And I think that HR can, under the guise of team building, use transparency as a way to bring people closer together. I know that we've often been closed in HR, but HR is human resources, and we got to act like we're humans, bringing other humans together. And I think that's very important in the world of work.
You talk about this effectiveness of hiring for attitude in new hires. You are correct. I've said for years, hiring attitude versus skills is the only way to hire, because you can't fix one, right? You can't just fix somebody's attitude, or it's very difficult to, let's be honest. But there are times when C-suite looks and says, hey, we need a skill set that is essential. We need a tolerance that's essential. And people sometimes bend those rules and say, hey, let's just not look at the attitude so much. Let's get what we need versus what we have to wait for to find the right person with the right attitude. What are some of the risks with that?
Well, there are obviously jobs where you need skills. People who are technical professionals, whether it's computers or engineers or financial people, they need to have certain certifications and qualifications technically that allow them to do the job, because they're not going to learn it in the job training process that goes on in most companies. But that's a very small percentage of the jobs that most of us hire for. Mostly we hire for people that are just doing something that they can learn rather quickly. Certainly in the hospitality business, it's all about attitude, and the skills are easily learned through some simple training. But, you know, when you hire a chief financial officer, do you want someone who is only concerned with the bottom line and how numbers add up? Or do you want someone that understands the human spirit and attitude and how that affects productivity and performance? I've had some great CFOs who really understood the effects of attitude on how you array a full-time equivalent. If they have the right attitude, you're going to get 102% or more out of them. If you hire a bad attitude, you're going to get less percentage. And when you're thinking about performance and productivity, attitude drives that far more than, I think, skills. Now, you have to make sure that they have some skills, either that you've trained them or that they brought with them. So you have to know exactly how to measure their skill level and their performance and their effectiveness. And unless managers are doing that appropriately, you're not going to get the full range of success in an organization that you really seek. But I like you, David, I agree. You hire for attitude, you get somebody that wants to do something, and they will do it well.
You know, you mentioned a few minutes ago a nonprofit organization called HopeForPrisoners.org. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, and how that has changed maybe the way that you look at things.
The fellow who started this is an ex-offender himself. He was in jail many different times, the last of which I think was for 12 years for armed robbery. And he was in solitary confinement for part of those 12 years. He had an opportunity to really look inward and make a decision to turn his life around. And he said that his mission, should he ever get out, is to help others to make the rest of their lives the best of their lives. And he got out and he started talking to people, started talking to the faith-based organizations, because the ministers of the world are the ones that have a natural affinity for this. But he also went back to the FBI agent who arrested him and the local police officials and district attorney who threw him in jail and said, I'd like to work with you to find the right people to help to turn this around. And so he formed a partnership with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department that is unique in America. You know, police departments tend to put people in jail rather than try to figure out ways to stop them from going back to jail. And this partnership really did a lot for Hope for Prisoners. The second thing he did was decide that this is not a one-time effort. We don't get them right out of jail and fluff them up a little bit and send them on their way. He has volunteer mentors that are trained and work with each individual for 18 months to make sure that someone is standing shoulder to shoulder with them helping them to navigate through a very confusing reentry process and answer questions or concerns that they have so that they learn to acculturate appropriately. And it, when I did this for the casino business, I did a 12-month mentorship, and I just sort of stumbled on that on my own. But this guy has developed it into an 18-month program, and the people he serves come back week after week for different kind of in-service training on attitude and life skills and reentry success stories. And this program has the lowest recidivist rate of any reentry program in America. You may or may not know, David, that someone gets out of jail, if they don't find a job, they don't have many options. And if they find a job, they still have a lot of obstacles. And so if unaided, up to 70% of them may end up back in jail. And that's just a waste of all the effort and money that we put into rehabilitation. At Hope for Prisoners, there is a 6% recidivist rate, which means that of the people we train, 85% find jobs within 30 days, and 85%, I think, stay in those jobs, don't lose those jobs, and only 6% of them ever slip and fall back and go back to jail. Now, that's an incredible number.
When you
think about the cost of incarceration, and it's almost totally non-productive expense versus the cost of investing in people and helping them to turn their lives around and become gainfully employed members of society, paying taxes and getting involved and rebuilding families and communities. It's really an unbelievable ROI story. And so it's something that communities all over America are starting to discover. Interestingly, Hope for Prisoners has gained the national attention. This guy, John Ponder, who runs Hope for Prisoners, has been at the White House, has spoken to Congress. He's done all kinds of things to promote his mission. And people are starting to see the goodness in it. The other issue that has come up in the last couple of years is unemployment. As unemployment goes down, and it is at almost record lows in America today, people still have to find qualified applicants for the jobs that are available. With immigration being down, as well as unemployment being down, it's a perfect storm of necessity driving the mother of invention. And so people are starting to think, well, maybe there's something in this. And there are more people like me and Hope for Prisoners who are assisting employers today, trying to help them understand their options, their opportunities, and what they have to do to be successful in this. The workforce investment boards in every state and in every community, the one-stop centers, the old unemployment people that have remade themselves into job developers, they have a natural connection to people that are unemployed in general, and that includes a broad range of people, from basic unemployment to veterans coming back to disabled people, to all kinds of issues. And now they have gotten more involved in working with people who are coming out of the criminal justice system. So there's a lot of assistance in this. And again, I'm sure you hear it like I do, companies saying, I can't find good employees. I can't find good applicants. Well, they're there. You just have to look maybe a little harder. You have to look a little closer. And you start to find that there are good people. Now, not all people with criminal backgrounds are going to be good applicants. Don't get me wrong. I think 50, 60, maybe 65% of them could be good applicants. I think that there's a hardcore group that'll never be good at anything but staying in jail, maybe. And I don't want to be cynical about it or disrespectful, but there are people that are lifers. And there are others who really are interested in turning their lives around and getting that and making the most of that second chance.
Artie, that is really a great topic of conversation, because I don't think that HR professionals think about that as much as they should. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLLB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis, as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good, but you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today, our guest has been Artie Nathan, President and COO of Strategic Development Worldwide. We've been talking about hiring people with criminal background checks and the effectiveness of hiring for attitude and training for skills. We're going to be talking about now a segment talked about catching people doing the right thing. Why is it so hard, Artie, to catch people doing the right thing and tell them when we're so easy to tell them when they're doing something wrong?
Well, you know, I may be a consultant now, but I was an HR guy for 30 years. And getting the most out of people, getting the most out of your managers, is a tricky proposition that every human resources professional is faced with. We in human resources preach documentation. When somebody does something wrong, we tell the manager, you have to document it. Now, you try to turn it around, but first and foremost, you have to document it. You have to put it in the file so that we have a record that progressive discipline or progressive coaching or counseling or whatever you call it has been tried before you recommend that maybe we consider terminating this person. And in HR, we stick to that mantra. And so we inadvertently get people to act like McGruff the crime dog rather than being a positive manager. And so I found in my own world back in the casino days that you can catch more flies with, or bears with honey, I guess is the way your mother used to say it. And I said to managers, how many good employees do you have on your team? And if somebody had a team of 10 people, they would always say, well, I have 7 or 8 or 9 great employees. And how many bad ones, I would ask? And they'd say, oh, 1 or 2. And then I would say, how much time do you spend on the bad ones versus the good ones? And they would say, well, you know, unfortunately, I have to spend 80% of my time on the 20% of my people that give me 100% of my problems. And that just goes counter to all the psychology training that we've all had. Training that says the behaviors that you want repeated are those that you should pay attention to. And so I would challenge my managers back then to, look, if you give one person a disciplinary notice or a warning, look around and see if you can't give 2 or 3 commendations at the same time to them or to others who are doing good work. Because people like to be recognized for the good work that they do. And if you look at all the surveys in America today, people are just convinced that nobody sees the good in them. And so I pioneered a program. I said, let's throttle back the disciplines and promote the commendations. They don't have to be formal written commendations, but a pat on the back, a thank you, you're doing a good job, an attaboy or an attagirl. And you can make it as formal as you want. You can post it as big as you want. And once that starts to get around, that people see the manager as balanced, having to do their job when things go wrong, but also interested in recognizing when things go right, they will start to see their manager as fair. And so when you ultimately have to have a conversation that is corrective in nature, people see you as trying to do both, and they will probably tend to listen a little more. And so I've made a practice out of catching people doing things right. Now, I can tell you that the way I learned this was with a bunch of housekeepers, people who cleaned rooms, they had the highest of turnovers, not because cleaning rooms was hard, but because nobody recognized how hard it was or how hard they worked to do things good and right. And so, well, we had lots of turnover in housekeepers when I started. And when I say lots of turnover, I mean hundreds of percentage points of turnover, because people didn't like the fact that nobody recognized how hard and how good they were working. And so I stopped my supervisors from just giving out disciplines and giving out commendations. And it was actually like an S&H Green Stamp program, if you're old enough to remember that. You know, you give people stamps, they collect them for goods and services and stuff like that. And turnover in housekeeping went from more than 200% to less than 10%. Not because the job got any easier or better, but because people recognized what people were doing, good and bad. And the housekeepers loved the fact that they got that kind of recognition. And we took that idea that we developed in housekeeping, and we spread it around to every department in the casino and in the hotel and in food and beverage, and it revolutionized our management practices and philosophies. It was just an unbelievable thing, and I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I mean, this wasn't a research project of mine. I guess I was thinking about how I would like to be treated, and maybe the golden rule is something that we should put more of in the workplace.
You know, it's funny you say that, but isn't it the simple things in life that we forget sometimes? You know, it's just such, treat people as you want to be treated, right? Listen to people, listen to be understood, right? And it's just such some basic principles that sometimes human behaviorists forget as HR professionals.
Well, in business, we tend to promote the idea that we have to be professional. We have to be businesslike. We have to be hard-nosed. We have to be hard-charging. And the fact of the matter is that we're people working with people, and people pretty much are the same everywhere. They want to be trusted. They want to be respected. They want to know that someone cares and is there for them. And good managers have to do that. I mean, being a manager is not an easy job. I understand that. But we in human resources have to encourage them and give them all the different kinds of tools that they can use to help get that sort of thing in the workplace.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, and we're going to be right back and talk about the case for having an employee communication specialist on every HR team. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock. and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching Maine employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts. StopWrecks.org.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. We've been talking today with Artie Nathan, President and COO of Strategic Development Worldwide. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation today. I'm your host, David Chulo, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We've been talking about hiring people with criminal background checks, effective hiring for attitude and training for skills, powerful practices of catching people doing the things right. And now we're going to end the show here with the case for having an employee communications specialist on every HR team. Artie, why a communications specialist? Aren't communications perfect in all companies?
Remember as a kid when we would play that game that you would whisper something to the person next to you and they would whisper it to someone next to them and it would go around a big circle and when it came back to you, you would check to see how accurately it got around. And the fact of the matter is that it got completely boggled by the time it came back. Communication is extraordinarily difficult. And it's hard between a man and a wife. It's hard between parents and children. It's hard between friends. And when you get a group of people at work who are all vying for, you know, a place, an acceptance, or whatever, it's either good or it's terrible. There's nothing in between. And so I've been an advocate for many, many years of having employee communications as a high-level process in my HR departments. Most companies spend a lot of time and effort and money on public relations and external communications and customer satisfaction communications. And I think you've got to put that same amount of effort and time and money into employee communications because it's been proven that employee satisfaction drives customer satisfaction. And so I think you put all your effort into employee satisfaction, and that is mostly communications. People do surveys all the time at companies, and they find out that the number one problem in companies or need in companies is to improve communications. The number one complaint is employees saying, "How come I didn't know about that? How come I'm the last one to hear?" And so we have to rectify that. That's one issue. The other issue is that companies that have and live by their values tend to be stronger companies, tend to have better missions and better success rates. And so having someone that is responsible for not just the message, but the tone of the message, the voice of the message, the consistency of the message, and how it relates in everything that we do is very important. Look, we have recruiting managers, we have employee relations managers, we have compensation managers. Those are very technical things that we do. But communications goes right to the heart of a company's ability to be successful, a company's ability to be an employer of choice. And so I think it starts with good communications. And this is a skill that you got to go out and look for. I mean, when I talk about hiring for attitude, that's one thing, but this is a real skill, like an engineering or a computer skill, people who know how to write and communicate effectively. And I think that a company having this, whether it's in HR or PR, it's something that companies can use to be more effective and more successful in any endeavor.
You know, Artie, I got to tell you, it's been a great conversation today. I think we've talked about a lot of great, you know, real discussion points that HR professionals don't think about that often. So, Artie, as we wrap up the show today, where can people find out about you? Where can they hear about you? Where can they hear you speak? Tell us a little bit about where they can get more information from you.
You can Google me like anything else, and you'll find out a lot of information about me. You can certainly email me at arte808@gmail.com. You can go on my blog site, theartofmotivation.blogspot.com, and you will see the kinds of things we're talking about today that I write about every day and send out to people. I would encourage you to Google hopeforprisoners.org. I think you will learn a lot about that process through that type of investigation. And if you ever have any questions, just write me. I love talking about this stuff.
You absolutely do, and you're great at it. And, of course, everybody can go to hrpowerhour.com after the show and see you and your information and link to you directly there. Artie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
David, thank you very much.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Did you know you could be liable for taxes if you settle an employment discrimination case? Hi, this is Ben Ford from Veral Dana's Labor and Employment Law Group. Most employment discrimination cases settle out of court. These settlements often include the payment of cash from the employer to the employee. These payments are broken into different categories, including attorney's fees, lost wages, and what we call non-economic damages or pain and suffering. Taxes must be withheld from the lost wages portion. This lowers the amount of money the employee takes home, so they will often want to minimize this portion of the payment. But if it's too low, the IRS can hold the employer liable for all taxes on what the IRS thinks is the proper amount. So, when settling cases, it is extremely important to consider and negotiate how best to allocate the settlement proceeds. Need a second opinion on that? Give Veral Dana a call.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.